There's people out there. It kind of feels nice, actually. So this morning's practice will be a practice of metta vipassana, which will be something that you've probably heard me speak of before, but we're going to, I'm going to talk about it and practice it in a way that's a little different, and I'll practice it in a way that's actually something that you probably could really benefit from and perform here, because we are on the second day, we have some concentration, we have some collectedness, and it's a practice that I think really addresses what I spoke about last night. So to just kind of walk through this a little bit before we do some practice, I'll try to speak briefly so we get an extended period of time to practice. Metta, I would imagine most of you have a pretty good sense of what that means, what that word is, a friendly, kind relationship towards experience, not necessarily towards myself or towards the other, but really towards experience, towards that which is arising. And so really, in the most basic sense, metta is when there's a tension and there's non-aversion. So there might be pain in my leg, there might be tiredness in my body, there might be like a whole range of things that I'm not particularly fond of. But there's a tension towards those, but there's not that aversion, there's not that needing it to be otherwise. There's also not the liking of it, there's not trying to make ourselves like or enjoy things that are unpleasant. So there's a kind of subtlety to it. So that's why I really like this term at ease. I can be at ease with essentially everything to some degree. It doesn't mean that I like it, doesn't mean that I'm stoked, doesn't really mean anything. It just means that I'm able to be with it in a capacity of presence. And ease. And that's pretty profound, actually. That's not like a simple thing. That's kind of a big deal, right, to be able to do that. So that's the quality. So that we might would say, in the scheme of meditation, that is the attitude of the mind. That is how the experience could appear through that kind of filter of kindness, of ease, of friendliness, of permission, maybe. Maybe it's actually that simple. I don't like you, but you sit right here. We'll do the best we can. Now, vipassana is a much more nuanced term. It's actually not as complicated as people make it, translated as insight, which doesn't really help, actually. What is insight? In the system of insight practice developed by Mahasi Sayadaw, in the progress of insight, there's really three actual aspects to that that are really mechanical and kind of easy to get. And what he talks about is first, as we've developed the sila, we've already talked about this, so there's an emphasis placed on metta vipassana and vipassana in particular, that we are already coming from a place of well-wishing, sila, goodness, and really from a place of understanding that we are trying to cultivate what is skillful, and to let go of or to abandon what's unskillful. So that's already baked in, but that's not always explicitly explained at the onset of vipassana. And so we start with what's called primary object. So a primary object is when you sit down, you put your attention somewhere, don't you, right? And again, the primary object can be a broad object. It doesn't necessarily need to be the same object. But it really wants to be, it doesn't necessarily need to be, but usually at first, when we first learn meditation, we need a somatic object to pay attention to, something that's kind of extremely obvious, like breathing. Breathing in, breathing out, that's pretty obvious. It's not hard to find. You know, like, what's he talking about, breathing? Where is this breathing thing? Where kindness is a little bit more of a subtle object. But we can work up to that. We can work up to a more subtle object, and I think actually there's a lot of benefit by working with objects that are a bit more subtle. So if we just use the breath as the primary object, we don't have to, but we'll just use that for the purpose of this teaching. So we notice that we have a primary object of breathing, and we bring our attention to that primary object, and we try to sustain our attention with that primary object, right? Which turns out to be pretty difficult. And not just for the purpose of being with that object, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to hold our attention on an object so that way we can feel the tug or the pull of what Mahasi calls the secondary object. We might call that a distraction. So I'm sitting and I'm breathing and I'm noticing my leg hurts and I'm noticing my attention. I'm noticing the tug towards that pain. I'm noticing the tug towards that thought. I'm noticing the tug towards, I don't know, all kinds of things that you probably have noticed. And I think the word tug is a good word because I notice it. I feel it tugging at me. It's like, you know, so at some point we want to be able to resist the pull and the tug of that secondary object so that we can maintain some degree of concentration or samadhi or collectedness, right? But that's not the end of the story. Most of us think that that's the end of the story. That's how mindfulness is often taught. Go back to the breath. Stay with the breath. But what Mahasi is saying is we actually want to begin to recognize and to name, and what he has in noting, we want to be able to recognize what is the secondary object and what are its characteristics. What is this secondary object? So then we still hold to that primary object, but we kind of look and go, well, all right. Because this thing, you ever notice things just, they're just, it's just knocking on the door of the present moment. And usually there's a lot of benefit by going, opening the door and saying, what is it? You know, usually it's in that kind of tone of voice too, isn't it? What do you want? Right? That's not metta, of course, but that's usually how we begin. So we kind of open that door and we, okay, well, that's a pain in the knee. That is tiredness in the body. That is a thought about what's for lunch. That is a plan. That is a memory. And so what we can start to see is these, we actually can develop a pretty sophisticated noting process of being able to discern what is the nature of that experience. What is that? Right? And then once it's identified or recognized, then we can go back to that primary object. So you see there's a kind of a shifting that happens. But if we don't come back to the primary object, or if we get too involved with the secondary object, we're gone. We're thinking. And that may go on for a little while, and then we maybe notice that, and then we eventually come back, right? So it's not just we wander and we come back, we wander and we come back. That is a valuable skill of meditation. There's no doubt about that. There's no argument about that. But that's definitely not the end of the story. That's kind of the beginning of the story. So we start to get one of the ways that Dharma is described in the Abhidharma manual, which is a very precise way of describing things, is that Dharma is the smallest unit of discernible experience. So that means I'm recognizing the tug of the secondary object and how well and how quickly am I able to discern what is that? Right? That's a plan. So sometimes it's the mental objects, there's the mentality object of the object, which is more of a thinking, a memory, a plan, a judgment, maybe a fear, right? And then there's the material objects, pain, sharpness. So I might notice pain in my knee, and I'll say, pain in my knee, ouch, bad, don't like, wish would go away, can't meditate till the pain in my knee goes away, right? And then you're just sitting here angry and upset. Because you're not interested, you're not really touching or rubbing or what they call penetrating the object. You're not understanding what is the characteristic of that. Well, it's kind of hot. It's a little bit sharp. Where is it? Well, it's about from the knee to the mid thigh. Okay, if I scan up my knee, can I get to the point in my leg where the pain goes away? Okay, yeah. Well, it's not. It doesn't hurt here, but it hurts here. Right? So I can kind of check out the characteristic of that object a little bit. But the thing about this is so hard, of course, I'm sure you can imagine, is when you start to observe or practice with a secondary object, you're likely to just get lost in thought. And there's just a learning curve to that, and you'll get through it eventually, right? And so we have this primary object, this secondary object. Then Vipassana actually is where we actually drop all objects, and we're just in the stream of events. So we're actually not really, the object becomes sort of irrelevant and we're just actually more aware of process of mind. We're in classic Vipassana, we're aware of the characteristic of change. Right? We're aware of there's a stream of consciousness, there's a stream of events that are just arising and passing away. And once we get past the kind of grabbing and pushing away the secondary objects, when we don't get hung up on that, we can kind of be more in this stream of events. So the benefit really, of being able to discern and recognize these secondary objects means that, we become more like Teflon and less like Velcro. They don't get us so much. And we see that, you know, we see things that we're in a constant change of events. In Abhidharma theory, there's this word they use called bhavajanga, which is the kind of stream of, kind of the mind stream that is unhindered by sensory input. And we kind of get access to that. And so that's really where insight becomes. We're sitting, we know we're sitting. We're not focusing on any particular object, but we're not lost in thought either. We're just kind of here. So again, to even the limitations of words here, you can see I'm getting into the limitations of words pretty quickly. But you know what I'm talking about. You've all been practicing. You understand this. You've seen glimpses of this. And you probably notice that when you see glimpses of this, it's kind of enjoyable to not be hung up on the contents of the mind. Now, metta vipassana is really helpful because what it does is it allows us to take an extra layer of skillfulness to the process. So what we try to do in metta vipassana is trying to bring kind and friendliness to the whole range of experience, right? So that's metta, that's the kind of the baseline. So in many ways, what I usually do, and I've been doing this for years, is my primary object is generally metta itself. It's a little bit more of a subtle object, but been doing this a while, I can generally tap into a felt sense of that, and I can let that kind of just be where I'm resting my awareness, right? So maybe in my body, maybe in my breath. I'm not so interested in the physicality, the material sense of the experience, but more in the attitudinal, heartfelt sense of the experience, which I have found to be profoundly transformative. And then often the breath or the body or the sound, all the physical objects, I don't really care, actually. I'm not concerned about trying to be with a particular object. So we start there, and then when we start to notice, and this is really good because sometimes these secondary objects, again, give rise to thought. So it's almost easier and more economical to kind of get into the saliency of the feeling tonality of the secondary object. So I might not know what the secondary object is specifically or discernible, but I definitely can tell if it has a valence of unpleasantness or pain to it. That's pretty easy. It's pretty easy to notice the secondary object that what's happening right now is I'm just not liking it. Maybe, and so maybe I don't even actually need to have that kind of specific kind of discernible thing, which I'm not very good at that. I get swept into my thinking when I do that. So when I shifted to metta vipassana, I said, okay, like, I don't need to know what this is, but it's not what is this, but how is this? This hurts. This is painful. This is unpleasant. I don't like this. I don't want to be here. So then the metta can kind of transcend or kind of modulate into compassion. So I don't know what this is. All I know is what's needed right now is I need to care. So there's kindness and then there's care. There's unpleasantness and there's pain. And those can all be happening at the same time, and that's okay. That's the best that's the best we can do, really. So this is a pretty profound thing, to be able to be in the experience of pain, whatever degree it is, and saying like, ouch, this hurts, this is unpleasant, and it's okay, I can care about this. Right? This is not just me, and then we can kind of, actually in many ways what we're doing is we're entering the domain of the wound with some skillfulness. And we don't even have to necessarily know what it is or what it's about. Or we don't need to have all the content. We just need to have the how is this. So there's the kind of, Ajahn Sucitto teaches this, and I did this for a month. You know, what is this? It's a painful. How is this? I don't like it. What does this need? It needs care. It needs attention. It needs for me to sit with it. That's what it needs. And so on the other side, when the experience is agreeable or pleasant or enjoyable or contented or all of these qualities, then that metta can kind of take on a quality of mudita or appreciation or gratitude or enjoyment or, dare I say, happiness or love. It's like, oh, this is... So, Nina, I mean, how often do you like have this itch where your body actually doesn't hurt and you feel connected? You're like, oh man, it's so nice that my body doesn't hurt right now. My body was on fire yesterday and now it doesn't hurt at all. This is nice. It's enjoyable. It's nice to be in the body and feel connected to the body and not feel angry about the body and feel touching into the body. That's all appreciation. Appreciation, maybe gratitude, these are kind of like high-level words, but there's just a basic sense of enjoyment or even just a basic sense of contentment. So again, also, Metta Vipassana is it's not a passive practice, it's much more active. It's, what is this? How is this? What is this? How is this? What does this need? This doesn't need, this. Me wanting this to be different is not going to help anything at all. Me wanting, needing, thinking about how this could be otherwise. Let's be honest, that's largely what goes on around here. I mean, that's a pretty, like, you know, at least in my mind, that is a frequent event. Right? And so I can try to back into that a little bit. And then, of course, and then they come around. So this is actually like a nice dashboard. There's metta at the bottom. When the secondary object and the tug of attention is kind of more into the pain and we're getting pulled into that kind of unpleasantness, difficult, there can be compassion. If we get pulled in the other way, there can be enjoyment, contentment. And then equanimity sits at the top, and equanimity monitors the whole experience, right? And says, this is what needs to be done. Equanimity has the wisdom to, equanimity knows what is the appropriate response all of the time. Right, so we train from the bottom up. This is not a top-down meditation. Usually meditation is kind of taught as top-down, kind of a cognitive endeavor of training attention and kind of coming down in, which I actually find to be more distracting. And when I go top-down, I usually don't get down. I usually stay top. But this is very bottom-up. This is from the body. This is from the soul. This is from something more deep in the experience. It's a bottom-up that's bringing the kindness into the body. And that's expanding outward. Right, so when we go bottom up, when we go top down, it's more concentrated, it's more kind of singular focus. But when we go bottom up, it's more expansive, it's more going out into the experience and saying yes to all of it. Right? And then knowing impermanence, like, you know, your leg's not gonna hurt the whole time you're here. Your other leg will hurt eventually. Or you'll be tired. Or you'll be contented. So part of it is what's built into that is the impermanence of like, I don't need to get upset about this. I don't need to fight this. I don't need to resist this because this will change on its own. It will self-liberate. Right? And so I think Vipassana without this feature of the Brahmaviharas, or the Appamanas as they're called in the early texts, the eliminables, I found it to really fall pretty flat. Doesn't do me much good. It gets too hot. I get too frustrated. And I start feeling betrayed by the practice. And all that stuff I mentioned last night just kind of comes on. So I've needed this kind of other way of doing it. And it also, I find it doesn't, it's actually the learning curve is less steep because I don't need to have that kind of, some teachers really focus on that kind of really, that really wise Vipassana of being able to discern the nature and the saliency of the experience with great detail. I really can't do that so good. And I like this because I don't really have to. I just need to know the salient nature of it. If it's like, okay, this is calling for compassion. This is hurting. I don't even know. And I don't need any more information than that. It's all the information I need. This is hurting. And I know that this is hurting, I know what this needs, and I can give it what it needs, and I don't have to get involved with the content and the outcomes, and why do I have to, and who says, and why this, and you know, all that. I start negotiating with the pain. Right? He's like, I'll be compassionate for you, but you need to go away. It's not that. So I think that's all I'll say about that. Let's do some practice. We have quite a bit of time. And so I really want to try to expand this. I don't like to use this terminology. This is not necessarily a beginner practice, but again, it's also not that complicated. I would imagine you're following along with what I'm having to say. And I think it's nice to spend some time and really a couple hours, and maybe even if you choose to, the whole day, exploring these. So you can take a few moments to just settle, and I'll let folks come back in. So just kind of let your body find a posture that feels kind, perhaps. And so just even before we begin, as you settle in and people come back into the space, just see if you can familiarize yourself with this idea of attending to experience without resistance or aversion, or just arriving in the full range of awareness or experience with just a quality of non-resistance or non-aversion. Let's see if you can open your mind and body to that idea, possibility. And I'll start and end this practice here with the bell. So we'll be beginning by bringing our full awareness into the experience of the body, of the material body, heat, temperature, sound, tiredness, restlessness, fear, contentment. Simply pouring the mind into the body. And simply beginning by just seeing if you can tend to your experience with openness, allowing everything in that's here, almost inviting. The fullness of the present moment. Fullness of mind. Coming into the fullness of the experience to see its most salient characteristic is that of change. What we call time has in fact just changed. Things are changing. The breath is coming and going. Different sounds are coming and going. Thoughts come and go with rapid speed, arising seemingly out of nowhere. Let's see if we can just begin by bringing a metta quality of kind, friendly, a sense of ease towards the nature of change. The seemingly slow pace in which things are changing. And to remember that to be with your direct experience is to be with change. And if we can attune our mind and heart to be at ease with change, we begin to experience a kind of patience. So training the mind to tune to these very subtle objects of experience, of ease, change, and you might even begin to notice the characteristic of this is patience, okayness, ease. from this place of patience, of ease, openness, as different secondary or distractors, or whatever you want to call them, begin to emerge, and just ask, what is this? This is pain. This is contentment. This is openness. What is being felt, what is being known right now? So as we feel more deeply into the experience, if we notice this hurts, you can see and recognize that I see you and I care. So any moments we get glimpses, senses, a felt sense of any kind of pain or stress, you say, I see you and I care. So this practice of what is this? This is pain. How is this? It hurts. What does this need from me? Compassion, care, warmth, kindness. So for the next few minutes as you practice, see if you can just cultivate care towards any kind of hurt, stress, physical, emotional, psychological pain. Kindness and care. Kindness and care. What is this? This is pain. How is this? It hurts. What does this need from me? Kindness, care, warmth, attention, forgiveness. What is this? This is pain. How is this? It hurts. What does this need from me? Kindness. Care. Warmth. And attention. So we recognize the distinct nature of this experience and we cultivate what's needed, what's courageous, then settling back into this, again, kind, friendly awareness of change, patience. And looking into the mind or the body to experiences that are pleasing, that are content, comfortable. Where is there comfort in the body? In the heart? What is this? This is comfort. How is this? This feels good. What does this need from me? Participation, appreciation, connectedness. Gratitude, enjoyment. So opening the mind to these secondary objects or experiences. And looking into the body where there is comfort, where there is contentment. Even at a very subtle level, it is there. How is this? It feels good, pleasing. Contented. What does this need from me? Participation. Appreciation. Gratitude. It's going to be hard, but to see if you can really allow yourself to soak into what feels good in the body right now. What feels good in the heart. or feels at ease or spacious. Allowing ourselves to enjoy what simply feels good right now. Resting and soaking into that. And then practicing on your own for a few minutes of just really looking, what is this? What is being felt and known right now? How is this? How is this? What does this need from me? Can I give it some presence and some ease, some kindness, care, enjoyment? Whatever it is. Opening the mind and heart to this quality of equanimity, this balanced approach to the moment. Equanimity has the wisdom to know what this is, to know how this is, and to openly and freely offer what is needed right now. Kindness, care, appreciation and understanding. And if at any point we become confused or lost in thought or find this to be challenging, you can just always back into where we started. A kind metta. May I be at ease with things just as they are right now. And so here we're just attempting to cultivate a beautiful relationship with our experience. Just practicing cultivating a beautiful relationship with our experience. What is this? How is this? What does this need from me right now?